Good evening and welcome to this 19th District live telephone town hall with your state lawmakers, Senator Dean Packer and State Representative Brian Blake. My name is Lily and I'll be your host tonight. Thanks for taking the time to join us. We are calling you tonight because your legislators want to give you an update on how the session is going and answer any questions you may have on issues currently under discussion. To ask your lawmakers a question, all you need to do is press star 3 on your phone and you'll be placed on the question queue. Again, we are calling you tonight because your lawmakers want to answer your questions about the issues that are important to you. So if you have a question for Senator Dean Tacko and State Representative Brian Blake, please press star 3 right now to speak with your lawmakers. Remember, press star 3 on your phone right now to ask a question. And now here are your lawmakers with some opening remarks.
Hello, this is State Representative Brian Blake. I'm happy to be here tonight. I am Chair of the House Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee. I am also on the Business and Financial Institutions Committee and also on the Commerce and Gaming Committee. And we are more than halfway through the session. We've both houses have released their budgets. And I'm hopeful that we can get the session wrapped up and get a good, stable budget for the communities and families of the 19th District.
Good evening. This is Dean Tacko. I'm the state senator for the 19th District. And I sit on the Ag, Water, and Economic Development Committee, as well as Transportation, and I'm the ranking member on the Local Government Committee. With that, I guess we'll just turn it over to the first question.
All right. Thank you. We are we still don't have questions just yet because people are dialing star 3 to ask their questions to get in the queue. So, folks, if you are just joining us, this is a live telephone town hall with your 19th district lawmakers, Representative Brian Blake and Senator Dean Tacko. While we are waiting for questions, though, maybe you could give a little summary or a little information on the House budget that was released earlier this week.
Okay, the House budget put $7.1 billion into K-12 education, fully funding public schools and closing the opportunity gap. And we're seeking to place high-quality teachers in every classroom and prepare students for the 21st century economy. And that's really the focus of this year. In addition, we're putting $400 million into higher education and freezing tuition for all students and increasing investments in financial aid, hoping to make college affordable or make it more affordable. Families first, we're investing in early learning and child care, $106 million there. Expanding early childhood education to 3,000 preschoolers and providing more child care resources for working parents.
And, looks like we have a question, so why don't we go ahead and start those.
Yeah. All right. Folks, if you are just joining us, this is your 19th District Telephone Town Hall. We are live with Senator Dean Tacko and Representative Brian Blake. If you have a question for them, please press star 3 on your keypad right now. We're going to go with Stephen, who has a question about car tab fees. Hi, Stephen. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I noticed that car tab fees keep going up and up, you know, and I'm kind of figuring out how come they keep raising it without the voters' approval. They just, you know, decide on their own.
Okay. Well, you know, Stephen, the main time that it went up was a couple of years ago when we did the big package for the construction. And, you know, the reality is we have to pay for these projects. And I can tell you, in the last few years in the 19th District, there's been a lot of money spent on state highways just down there in Pacific County in the last, say, three, 4 years or so. Between Rock Creek, the NEMA, Highway 101, there's been 7 bridges built on state highways, and we've averaged from about $5 or $6 million up to, I think, the the bigger one was about $12 million. So, you know, you got to pay for these things. We also have projects that are in the queue right now. The 432, 433 interchange is an $83 million project that'll be coming online here in just a couple of years. So, you know, I don't like raising things any more than someone else does, but the reality is that somebody's got to pay for these things. And we have a tremendous backlog of highway projects, particularly bridges that need updating. So, you know, that's kind of the short answer for me. I don't know.
I remember when the car cabs were out of control, and in talking with folks, you know, they didn't know what the cabs were paying for, and truth be told, the legislature back then would, if they needed funding for ambulance services or something else, they would just stick it on the MBET car cab, and there was really no nexus with transportation. After the initiative, the legislature has been very careful about making sure that if there were increases in either gas taxes or car tabs, that the revenues were dedicated to transportation in the state. And but I understand your concern. I in the end, I voted no on final passage on the last transportation package because there was a couple more projects I thought that deserved to be constructed in the 19th district. But your point well taken. Car cabs have increased, so thank you.
All right, thank you both. If you have a question for your lawmakers, please press *3 on your keypad right now. We're going to go with Randy, who has a question about maintenance of the Westport Marina. Hi, Randy.
Hello. My question is kind of a two-part question, and I'm wondering why you have not allocated funds to dredge the Westport Marina while the state continues to collect taxes, license, and permit fees to maintain a major economic port. And at the same time, is the state willing to pay damages to our vessels when we start hitting the bottom of the marina while making our way through it?
Well, go ahead, Dan. Yeah, you know, we certainly, I can tell you that myself and Senator Vandaway from the next district up, the 24th, and others, Brian, Representative Blake, we have been working and lobbying like crazy to the capital budget people about funding that. I was disappointed when the Senate budget came out, and that wasn't included. Well, there was a small amount of money for some engineering, but to do the actual project wasn't in there. That doesn't mean we're done. We're lobbying like crazy with the budget people. One thing I got to explain is this year the capital budget is very thin and very competitive. And one of the reasons is there's about twice as much money in really rough numbers, from about $400 million in a normal year to about $800 million that's going to school construction. The state is obligated to match some of the money when the cost when a school is being built. And we have that obligation. And in the last few years, now that the recession is over and districts are starting to pass bonds, there's kind of a backlog. And so a lot of capital money is going into school construction, which makes it very competitive to go after money for member projects, as we call them, in our districts. That doesn't mean we haven't been trying. That's just the Senate budget, and we haven't seen the House budget come out yet. And there will certainly be negotiations on all of this stuff once we see the two budgets together.
Yeah, this is Brian Blake. Just a reminder, that's a port marina, not a state marina. But that said, I think your state legislators are very interested in funding, helping to fund that rehab of that marina. I think that the fishing industry, both sport and commercial, that come from that marina is very critical to our economy. And I'll certainly be pushing to see that the House capital budget has more money in it, and then hopefully we can negotiate the budgets between the House and Senate and be a partner with the port in restoring the needed depth at that marina.
Okay, thank you. So many people have began joining us. If you are new to this conversation, this is a live telephone town hall with your legislators from the 19th District, Senator Dean Tacko and Representative Brian Blake. If you have a question for either or both of them, please press star 3 on your keypad right now. We are going to go with David, who has a question about education funding.
Yes. Dean, I really appreciate, from the Senate's perspective, really give support. I work in the school district down in Vancouver at Clark College, and especially the STEM division, and we really appreciate that having educational support from the Senate perspective, much like the House, and would you be willing to give firm support for education at this time? That is something that we desperately need. Over the years, it's been difficult in getting funding at times, and we would greatly appreciate it if you'd be willing to stand out and giving support from the Senate perspective. Would you be willing to do that?
Yeah, I'm not really quite sure what you mean by the Senate perspective. If you're talking about their property tax swap, that has some problems. But when it comes to the funding education totally, certainly, we're going to find a way to get through this McCleary issue and fund this thing this year. We have two, I wouldn't call them diametrically opposed ideas, but the Senate's proposal and the House proposal is, significantly different. And so it's going to be some tough negotiating. You said you were STEM, and there's one thing that I think we all realize, that those STEM programs and the money going into that is really an important thing with the future of what kind of jobs we're going to have out there. And that in career and technical training is another thing that we really have to start looking at. Not all kids can go to college, and not all kids want to go to college. And so we have to have some alternatives that kids that can or don't want to go to college and actually get some training and get out there and get a good job. So I'm willing to spend the money. Kind of the overall question is where do we get the money?
All right, thank you. Folks, this is a live telephone town hall with your 19th district lawmakers, Senator Dean Tacko and Representative Brian Blake. If you have a question for them, please press star 3 on your keypad. And we also have some online questions. I'm going to read one to you. This is Victor, who has a question about the Senate Republican tax plan that will raise property taxes $5.5 billion. And he's asking, do you support that?
So my understanding of the Senate tax plan is that it would raise property taxes in some districts and lower them in others in regards to education. I think there's some merit in their plan. I like the House plan better, but you're going to see the two houses, the Senate and the House, pass their budgets and then start negotiating. And I think what we'll end up with is something like a hybrid. My goal is to get a budget that solves the McCleary problem and does the job and fully funds basic education as the Constitution requires us to do. So,
the Senate plan, it raises money, but it also, raises taxes in some areas, and it reduces taxes in others. But a problem that I have with it is, as it reduces taxes in some areas, it's across the board. And we have a very regressive tax system in our state to start with. And as we do that, in our 19th district, the property taxes will probably lower a small amount. But if you look at the corporate entities in the district, they're going to get a heck of a tax reduction. In fact, we made a study of it, and I could go down the list here of some of the bigger industries in the 19th district, and whether a homeowner is going to get maybe $100 cut, you know, Weyerhaeuser, theirs is $764,000. EGT Grain is $266,000. North Pacific Paper, $328,000. Puget Sound Energy, $185,000. Sierra Pacific, $125,000. Those are cuts that they're going to get that, you know, literally they didn't ask for, but they're going to get it if we go through the Senate plan where the homeowner gets a small cut. And in some places, it'll actually be larger. And I think just because of the variability across the state, I think it causes some real problems. And I'm having a hard time wondering if the legislators in some of those high-value districts up in the Puget Sound area can vote for something that's going to have huge tax increases on those houses up there in the high-value districts. So it's an interesting concept and probably will be some type of a hybrid of what the Senate did in the House. I mean, that's pretty typical.
All right. Thank you. Please remember to press *3 on your keypad if you have a question for Senator Dean Tacco or Representative Brian Blake. We're going to go with Michael, who has a question about hunting and fishing licenses.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, I'm here. Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
Hello?
Hello,
go ahead.
Yes, I'd like to know why that the I'm 100% service connected disabled veteran. The fishing license, the hunting license, continue to increase, but the fishing days available seem to decrease. We can no longer fish for sturgeon. The days for salmon and steelhead are cut to about zip. I understand conservation, and I don't understand why this is happening when the commercial folks can go in, understand that it's kind of a living for them. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. Could you explain that to me, please?
Sure, Michael. This is Representative Blake. The certainly the opportunity got bad enough last year that I didn't buy a fishing license. I bought a hunting license, but not a fishing license. Some real problems with salmon production and survival in the ocean. And that said, I've been going over the graphs of the downward trend in hatchery production for our salmon in this state, and it's abysmal how few salmon we raise anymore. I did have a bill this year that I drafted with some veterans with disabilities to reduce their license costs, and it didn't make it very far this year. The bill's still alive, technically, and I'll keep working that bill to see if we can't give our veterans a break. That said, the department is under a difficult situation with revenue. The legislature cut their general fund contribution from $120 million to, I think, under $60 million, and that was a significant hit to their budget. They've been limping along for a few biennium under those cuts, and they are seeking to raise some license fees. I do have a commercial fee license bill that I was able to move out of committee, and it's parked in, I believe, the Appropriations Committee, and the sport hunting and fishing license fee bill is still in my committee, has not moved, and it doesn't sound like there's much support for that. It's a difficult situation, and I'm hoping to turn it around to increase hatchery production. What the commission, the Fish and Wildlife Commission, did in the Willapa by cutting hatchery production 35%, I think is really going to hurt the economy in the 19th district, and I'm hoping at some point to be able to restore those cuts.
Yeah, this is Senator Sacco, and as a fisherman and a hunter all my life, it is really frustrating to see what's going on, but it's, you know, it's a very complicated thing, just like Brian said, that, you know, you've got ocean conditions, you mentioned the sturgeon, we've got sea lions up at Bonneville Dam that are going down and getting the large breeding sturgeon and bringing them up and eating them. You know, we've got hatcheries that aren't putting out the fish for budget reasons. We've got some hatcheries that don't put out fish because of they don't want those runs mingling with the natural spawning salmon that they're trying to preserve going up the rivers, which I don't necessarily agree with. But it's very complicated, and in the end, though, we don't have as much opportunity as we did, and it's hard for me to justify raising license fees when at the same time your opportunities are going down. So as a hunter and a fisherman, I feel for you. I understand where you're coming from.
All right, thank you. Folks, if you have a question for your lawmakers, Senator Dean Packer or Representative Brian Blake, please press *3 on your keypad right now. We're going to go with Commissioner Brady, who has a question about the Senate budget.
Senator Taco, Representative Blake, I'd like to thank you both for all you've done for our district over the years, and hopefully will continue to do. But after overlooking the new Senate budget proposal, it'll be devastating for the counties in your district. The shifting of costs back down to counties is just not sustainable. And I believe in the bargaining coming up with the House budget and the Senate budget that I really hope you're able to fight back on a lot of these cost shifts, particularly the smaller rural counties. Thank you.
Well, it's always great to hear from you. I know you guys down in Wolfpack and county commissioners have a rough job with all the problems that are going on with, the marble murrelets and, you know, you can't log to the lands that you do own or that are held in trust for you. So I certainly talk to you enough and I understand your problem. But yeah, you know, they've done a lot of sweeps and, somebody that came out of local government, I don't like what I see. I shouldn't speak for the House budget, but the Senate budget, you know, sweeps money that should have gone or used to go to the local governments. And somewhere we've got to, you know, get back on track where we have some revenue here so that we don't have to take those things and even start giving liquor money back and gas tax money and marijuana revenue and all the other things that, you know, that you have gotten in the past and now we're hanging on to them. I've chaired the local government committee for quite a few years in the House before I got to the Senate, and now I'm in the local government committee in the Senate, so I see this from time to time as you come in, but, you know, we've tried to do some things. We've tried to raise the 1% limit, but we can't get there. The planting language, we've tried that, and we struggle trying to give you the supplanting language that you're looking for. So, you know, it isn't the way some of us aren't trying.
Yeah, this is Brian. The House budget, I think, treats our partnership with local government better. I'm a firm believer in the best government is government that's delivered closest to the people, but it's up to us at the state level to at least allow the local governments the tools to deliver that government, whether it's sheriff's deputies on the road or community health care. I think we do better in the House budget in delivering that partnership to local governments, and I will continue to fight for that. So thank you.
All right, thank you. We are almost at the half mark on this call. Thank you so much for being with us. There's a lot of you on the call, so we're grateful that you're spending this time with us. We're going to go now, of course, press *3 if you have a question. We're going to go with Bruce, who has a question about the Maysell Youth Camp. Bruce?
Oh, hello. Hi. I'm a retired teacher from the Nacelle School District, and I really appreciate how both of you have put your enthusiasm behind fully funding the education system in the state. I really appreciate that, and I appreciate also how difficult it is to find the money to fund that. And I think it was Senator Takao that was speaking, talking about Senate budget proposal is going to shift things so much to lower income people, property owners, and away from corporates. I appreciate your thoughts on that. My real question, I'm so sorry for being so long, is there a budget proposal that can fully fund education and fully fund the NACL Youth Camp, which, having worked closely with it, I know that it is an extremely valuable thing for the youth that go there, and it is, of course, Pacific County's biggest employer. So, thank you.
Okay, Bruce, I've been a strong supporter of the NACL Youth Camp for 13 years, ever since I got here, and, I certainly knew about it, when I lived down in the area. But once I got up here and really got to know the youth camp, it's a big employer down there, very important for jobs. I don't go out and try to sell that we need the NACL Youth Camp because of the jobs. I try to sell it, which that certainly is important, but I try to sell it on the fact that it does a good job with the kids that go there. And there's been testimonials. I've gotten emails and letters, and we've even had some of the youth that have been there that were now adults come to committees and tell about their story and how it helped turn them around. And it will be, it's in both the House and the Senate budget funded. They've tried to cut it before, and we always go to bat for them. It's kind of an easy thing to target. The thing that was interesting this year is that the governor didn't put it in his budget right from the get-go. And when I saw that, when the budgets first came out, I had the nonpartisan staff in the Senate go to OFM and really look at their numbers. And right from the get-go, they said that OFM realized that the savings that they booked into the governor's budget really wasn't as much as they thought. It was probably only about half. So that kind of helped, sell the thing that it doesn't make sense to close it. But make a long story short, it's in the budget for both the House and the Senate, and I don't know any reason why it wouldn't be there, and NACL Youth Camp will continue to move along. And like I say, it's a great program. I've been down there numerous times, know the people that work there, and had a chance to talk to the kids, and I can't say enough of good things about it.
Yeah, this is Brian Blake. I have family down in NACL, the youth camp has really been a priority. And then, coming from timber country, the work that these kids do and the knowledge they gain, the work ethic, and the services that NACL is unique in delivering to the kids, I think is just should be more highly recognized. I'm always going to fight to keep that camp open. I think the work it does is critical for these youngsters, and was gratified that early on this session, when we pushed back hard as a 19th district team, that there was broad recognition that NACL Youth Camp should stay open, and we should continue putting resources there because of the value that it gives. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you. If you have a question for your lawmakers, please press *3 on your keypad right now. We are going to go with Debbie, who has a question about the capital gains tax. Hi, Debbie.
Hi. I have a question on the capital gains tax that they're proposing to increase. What areas would be included in that capital gains tax? And is your timber harvest capital gains included in that as a tax increase?
Yeah, no, timber is not included in that. And this is basically to reach capital gains for stocks and bonds, it would be only on reach about 2% of the population of the state would pay anything in capital gains, and a very narrowly tailored, it's an interesting, I think the way it's structured, it has merit, but it's my understanding that it would not affect timber harvest at all.
All right, thank you. We have another online question from Nancy, and it's a two-part question. She says she is concerned about Ducky's bill. She doesn't understand how exactly it's going to work. That's the first part of the question. The second part is, what are the chances of that bill actually passing?
Okay, this is an online question?
Correct.
Yeah, this is hi, Nancy. I'm the sponsor of the House Bill 1060 called Ducky's Bill, and it just had a hearing in the House Education Committee and was voted out unanimously. You know, when I was initially approached about the issue, it was a little bit scary, and as I learned more about it and the children it will help, I really became comfortable with the bill. So if you can imagine a child that's having violent seizures and eating a cookie with CBD oil in it will reduce those seizures. And so the child may have a cookie in the morning before they go to school and need a dose, say, about noon. Under the bill, the school districts and the school and the parent would make arrangements. The parent would show up at school at a predetermined time. The child would step out of class. The parent and child would step into a side room. The child would eat the cookie. And then the child would go back to class. And the parent would leave the school grounds with any remaining cookie with the CBD oil on it. And the child would never carry the product with them in school alone. The parent would always be in possession of it. And so I understand... believe me, it scared a lot of people when we first introduced it, and we've worked with other members to put some protections in there for school districts, and we're comfortable with the bill at this point. It's done in two other states and seems to be working, and the critical part is getting these children to stay in school where they have access to educational professionals and can grow and learn and thrive like we want all our children to.
All right, thank you. If you have a question for your lawmakers, you can press star 3 on your keypad right now. We're going to go with Norris. And he has a question about hatcheries and Willapa.
Yes, I was wondering, why don't you... just let those fish, like in the Whirlpaw hatchery, just let them go up and spawn. I've been to many fisheries meetings, and they have never, ever told me how many fish can go up above that Whirlpaw hatchery. And that's really critical. And we had a program here. The Gillnetter Association had a program, and they were getting eggs from the hatchery and putting them in boxes. And we were all involved in it, and it worked out very well. And then we couldn't get any eggs anymore. You know, we've got a deal now where you're going to cut back on the amount of fish that come out of the hatchery, and that's going to hurt everyone because we get a lot of, here in the Willapa, we get a lot of Seattle fishermen come down here because they can't fish in Puget Sound. I'd like to see that changed if you could.
Well, I think I could speak for both Senator Tackle and I that we'd like to see that changed too. I think the current Fish and Wildlife Commission's policy regarding the Willapaw Bay fisheries and hatcheries is wrongheaded and a huge mistake. Years ago, under Referendum 45, the ability to influence the department was taken out of the legislature's hands and put into an independent commission, And I have to say, it's limited what we can do as legislators. We're pushing back after the commission adopted their Willapaw policy a few years back. Dean and I were able to put money for 2 million more Chinook in the nacelle system. I would like to restore all the cuts. As you well know, they've done genetic testing on the Chinook in Willapaw Bay, and they're all the same fish. There's not a wild population. There's hatchery fish that have spawned in the wild and produced Chinook, but there is not a wild population distinct in the entire Willapaw Bay in any of the rivers. And know that we're fighting to restore those cuts and turn this around, but we're fighting a commission that disagrees with us.
Yeah, I think Brian can speak for me on that. You know, it's very frustrating to see that our hatcheries aren't pumping out as many fish as they can, and it just takes away opportunity from both the sport and the commercial fishermen. I'm frustrated, but as he said, we're very frustrated with how the commission operates these days, and there's not a whole lot we can do about the commission.
All right, thank you. Let's see, we have a lot of you on the line. Thank you for getting in the queue for your questions, and press star 3 if you have them. We're going with Leo, and Leo wants to talk about the difficulties on living with fixed incomes. Hi, Leo.
Yeah,
Leo? All right.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh.
Ma'am?
Yeah, go ahead. Ask your question.
Yeah, I just wanted just to ask questions on the, as far as the retired people and everything, the rent has been going up a lot. Electricity, license tags, everything keeps going up on a lot of us as far as senior people are concerned. But, our wages never seem to move at all, and it hurts us a lot. And so we need things to be understood. And a lot of, like the state of Washington, that there needs to be some improvement on our income or something if they're going to start to keep raising all the prices on everything else in the state. Thank you very much.
Well, I don't have a real good answer for you, you know. As things, one thing goes up, you know, as electricity may go up, then the grocery store that has to run their coolers using electricity are going to raise their price. And, it's just one thing leads to another. And we certainly have had stagnation in wages and salaries in the last number of years, ever since the Great Recession or maybe even before. So I really don't have a good answer about how you stop it, inflation. I don't know, maybe Representative Blake might have some good ideas.
Yeah, thanks for calling, and you know, we need to be cognizant of what we do here affects people, and in the budget, I don't know what the source of your income is, but to the extent that we can help cut costs or increase your fixed income, I'd be interested in hearing more about your situation. And I can be reached at 360-786-7870 is my office number.
And when we can, we do try to make exemptions and such as the property tax. We have low-income senior and disabled exemptions, and, you know, we have those exemptions on a number of programs to try and help low-income people. I know the PUD, at least in where I live, has a low-income program for PUDs or for customers. So, you know, we try to do what we can, but to just, kind of stop in overall inflation, I don't know how we do that.
All right, thank you. Well, let's see, we have Jennifer on the line who has a question about water metering private water wells. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, yeah, thank you. I was wondering, is that something that the state is still considering as a proposal, and what the status of that is and the purpose of it?
Well, no, if it was up to me, and I think I can speak for Representative Blake, there won't be any meters. That's just such a hot-button issue that, unfortunately, every time we have a water issue, which you may be referring to or know of the Hertz decision on water, it's kind of a complicated decision, but kind of the end result of it is that exempt wells, people drill for a single-family dwelling, typically, a person out in the county that's got a five-acre tract and wants to build a house on, it just literally shuts those down and there'll be no well drilling. We have got to solve that problem before we get out of here, because we can't go through the summer with people not drilling wells. So there's a number of ideas floating out there, and the Department of Ecology is trying to find some middle ground. And there's kind of, I don't know if I'd call them necessarily diametrically opposed, but there are two bills out there that go at it from kind of opposite directions. And they're trying to find some middle ground. And unfortunately, when they drafted that and briefed some of us, they had some language in there about certain wells need to be metered. Well, as soon as that word metered well comes on the table, then everything kind of starts falling apart, because people do not want to have metered wells. I don't want them to have metered wells, and it's really not needed. So to get to the short part of your answer is, I cannot see that we will ever have something that would meter every well out there that somebody has. Could we get to a point where specific wells, for some reason, have a meter on them? That could happen, but even that I kind of doubt.
Yeah, we heard the Senate bill that is trying to deal with the Hearst decision, the state Supreme Court decision regarding private wells, household wells up in Whatcom County. Unfortunately, the impact of that decision eventually will get to the 19th District, so we're trying to craft a bill that will deal with the problem. There's very few people talking about metering as a solution, and I do not believe you will see meters as part of the solution. But stay tuned, stay in touch with us, and I'm hopeful that we can resolve this issue. And it's mostly about new wells. Existing wells are not captured in the issue that we're debating up here in the legislature right now.
Thank you. We have 15 minutes left of this call. Thank you for being with us, and thank you for your questions. If you have one, please press star 3. Let's see. Alice has a question about convicts turning their lives around. Hi, Alice.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm here. Okay. My question is, I'm a felony, and I have been off probation for 5 years. Got my high school diploma, graduating in June with my accounting degree from the University of Phoenix, and it's like no one out here in South County wants to give me a job.
So I assume you're referring to the ban the box bill.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, I support that bill. I think it has enough protections in there for the employer. Certain jobs, you could have the box that where you have to talk about your or note that you did have a conviction. But I think it is fair. Who are these people like yourself that have turned their lives around to go to college and get a job? You got to be able to hire them, and I think that it's a reasonable thing to have the first step of an application. You don't necessarily have to divulge that until you get to the second step in the interview. Now, there are some jobs that certainly I think is probably appropriate, and that's written into the bill. So I'm there with you on that.
Yeah, this is Representative Blake. Yeah, I was a supporter of the bill. We passed it out of the House. I think it's the right thing to do. To give people a chance to show what they can do in the employment process, and I'm hopeful that the Senate will adopt it and we can get it on the governor's desk. And you know, people sincerely want to turn their lives around and get back into society, and this is one way to do it. Thanks for the call.
Thank you. We're going to take Kathy's call right now, and she has a question about early learning. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Hi. I was wondering, well, first off, I want to say thank you for your work on the McCleary Act. We definitely need that funding fully. The schools are struggling. I'm a special education preschool teacher, and I'm hearing talk about funding, more funding for early learning. Are we going to see anything in the classroom that will make a difference, or is this extra money just going to cover the costs that have already happened?
Well, on the Senate budget that the Republicans wrote, there is some classroom slots, but more classroom slots. But unfortunately, to get there, they have phasing out, I guess would be the right term, the three-year-old ECAP, which I certainly don't support. You know, I've always been a strong supporter and voted for anything that dealt with early learning or pre-K children. It's just kind of a passion of mine. I like little kids. And I've read the statistics on a lot of studies of how much kids that go to preschool, pre-K, how much better they do when they get to kindergarten, first, second, third grade, you know, even long term, 20 years out, when they do studies of kids that had preschool and kids that didn't, and they look at the long term, there are certainly benefits. So I think we're heading in the right direction, and we've got a bill, you know, to create the Department of Early Learning, which would pull a lot of these, pre-K programs into one department rather than having them spread out across a number of agencies in the state. I think it's a good deal. I don't know if we can pull it off this year. Representative Kagi is a champion of it. She has championed many of an early learning program and has been very successful. So with her pushing it, I think there is a fairly good chance.
Yeah, this is Brian Blake. There's $106 million in the House budget increase to early learning, adding 3,000 preschool slots and hoping to provide more child care resources for working parents. And so it's my hope that we can put more resources into the classroom. Thanks for the call.
Thank you. And we're going to go with Daryl, who has a question about, new gates in South Bend. Close gates. Yeah, Daryl?
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
I live in South Bend, Pacific County, and we don't have any Forest Service. And recently, near me, it was a new gate, a couple of new gates, and there's been gates all over our area in the last month. Some of the signs say private property, no trespassing, violators will be prosecuted, a report dumping. One of the new gate on one of the main lines is, I can't remember, but anyway, we don't have any Forest Service. So basically, here in the North County, I live in South Bend, we're limited to a little strip of land down 101, and to me, this, I just feel like I'm back in the days of a serfdom. So, you guys have any plans or how we tackle this corporate bad behavior? Thank you.
Well, thank you, Daryl, for the question. This is Representative Blake. This is an issue that's dear to my heart. I've been working on it for several years. I saw it coming several years before that, and there's been a change in the federal tax laws, and a different form of corporate ownership has taken over, and looking to see top dollar on their investments. And I've been pushing back with the large landowners trying to design carrots and not use sticks. I do have a bill that is working its way through the process right now that uses the recreational immunity clause in our state law and expands that so the state could work with these large landowners and make arrangements for public access. That doesn't do you or I any good right now, but I'm hopeful in, if we can get that bill passed, that the state can start working with these large landowners to reopen that access back up and to what we historically enjoyed. It's a difficult situation. I'm a hunter and a fisherman myself, and like you, I've had to travel. There is, off of Highway 6, there's some DNR, large blocks of DNR land that you can still get on, but I understand the problem.
All right. Thank you. That's all the time we have tonight. Thank you for joining us this evening. I will hand the phone over to your lawmakers for closing remarks, but first I want you to know that if you didn't get a chance to ask your question, you can leave a message for your 19th district legislator at the conclusion of this call. And now here they are with closing remarks.
Go ahead. Oh, okay. Yeah, this is Senator Tacko, and thanks for joining us tonight. We do this occasionally, and we, you know, enjoy hearing from people and what their concerns are. You know, this is our 105-day session, and every other year, this is the year that we write the budget. It's a tough one, and it's, you know, everyone on the House and the Senate, both Democrats and Republicans, are really working hard trying to find the answer to a lot of tough questions. Not only do we have to struggle to find the McCleary, fund the McCleary decision, which is to the tune of, you know, several billion, but we also have to do, solve some issues dealing with mental health and a lot of other things. So, you know, it's a tough year. It's probably the toughest year I've seen, and I just hope that we can all pull together and get this thing done on time.
Well, thank you all for calling in and listening tonight. As you heard Senator Tacko say, it's probably one of the toughest budgets that we've ever written, trying to solve this McCleary decision. We've got to make investments in mental health services, protect the social safety net, and deliver government services, and remain viable partners with our local governments. And so it's a difficult situation. I'm confident that we can get it done, and please feel free to stay in contact with me. My email is brian.blake@ledge.law.gov. That's brian.blake@leg.wa.gov. And I can be reached at 360-786-7870.
Thank you. And this is Senator Tacko. My email is similar. It's my name, dean.tacko@leg.wa.gov.
Thank you. Thank you. Sorry. Thank you very much.